Welcome to Da Vinci's Discourse, where the minds of today's most innovative entrepreneurs are unveiled and explored. And my name is Kyle Campbell, your guide on this journey into the depths of the entrepreneurial psyche. So sit back, relax, and get ready to dive into the minds of the greats. This is Da Vinci's Discourse.
All right, let's rock it. So Abby, it's awesome to have you here. Why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? First of all, if somebody were to ask you who you are, what would you tell them?
No, that I think the answer to that changes every year. And that's what's great about being an educator. Like, we're all about change. We're all about growth.
Yeah.
So I try to embody that spirit. So this year, I would put first a student of physics, cancer advocate, then, which normally would probably be two or three on the list, but I'm putting them first, a writer, mother, and educator.
Lovely. That's okay. Awesome.
And I focus on the future of education. I'm very much a tech-enabled futurist and want to get the educational systems we have here ready for this world we're entering.
Right. Well, let's get into that a little bit, because if somebody were to ask you, and I love how you didn't, because sometimes I ask the question and they'll tell me what they do as opposed to who they are and what their values are and what they stand for. So let's get into the second part of the question. That is what do you do for a living if somebody were to ask you that?
Yeah. Currently, I am writing and taking some time to reflect. Mm. So I've given myself 8 months. I very much want to be part of the rethink of education. And right now, I'm finding myself, along with other thought leaders in this space, really in limbo as to who's going to win this election. That very much matters in the United States as to what we can do next in pushing forward new thinking. Especially health education. So I am pausing, literally pause button, to find out who wins this election, what we will be able to do, who are the players that we can focus with. And right now, really focusing on writing. I have a personal blog that I write about, from everything from educational policy to parenting to, unfortunately, my family has had two rare cancers in our nuclear family of four, including my son. So I've spent a lot of time in hospitals working and with pediatric cancer.
Wow. That's why it's taken priority on your list. I mean, Jesus. Sorry to hear that. Seriously. Let's get into the education part of it, because I'm curious, what are some problems that you're noticing as opposed to the future vision that you have for it? What do you want to change?
So I think we're all in agreement from every right, left, middle, that something has to change. But if I had to pick like one thing, like a concrete thing that we all can like really understand, is, you know, education was created for a certain type of economy and a certain, you know, we're working off the Industrial Revolution concept of education. And one thing that we know for sure is upfront loading. And what I mean by that is you go to school, 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 and then you're set for life. You know, it's all upfront investment, upfront loading of children, all that is it works, you know, and that you're ready for life, and that upfront years, whether you went to medical school, whatever your path was, sets you up indefinitely. That is no longer the case. Any company would tell you that's no longer the case. Yep. Upskilling is going to be essential. And I think the idea of just thinking about what is education, what that process looks like, because now the average college student is not the traditional student. The traditional student is 25 years old plus, working a job and getting their degree at the same time. And that is where it's going. So this traditional path that we've been thinking about is actually not happening, but yet we're still teaching in that way. So some things that really excite me is to rethink education backwards, to looking at what the goal is, like what is the goal of this school? What is a student looking to become? And designing backwards, because not everything takes 4 years and not everything should cost the same. You know, for example, I wanted to be a teacher. I went to Duke University. Every one of my roommates are in finance, every single one. And I am the only teacher, but I paid the same and I make 1/8 of what they make. You know, really thinking what it can be. I'm very excited about vocational certifications. I'm excited about seeing the private market come in with Google putting out an incredible product, you know, on the education front. So all that really excites me. And I think this is an exciting time to really talk about as educators, how we can rethink this structure to have more bite-sized pieces when people need the education because they see the value of it.
Ah, I love that. And yeah, that's so true, right? I mean, you became a teacher as opposed to somebody in finance, 1/8 of what they make, yet you pay the same amount for the tuition. It's like, come on, it doesn't make any damn sense. On the surface, anyway, I mean, like, there's all kinds of complications when it comes to that. It's difficult, but like you said, something needs to be done about that, especially in the States and Canada. I mean, Europe, for example, they get paid to go to university. There's no tuition. It's the opposite. They get paid like 500 euros a month in Italy, for example, to go to university. The problem there is that then you got like 45-year-old people who have never been in the workplace, because why would they if they could just get paid to keep getting doctorates over and over again? And so that's you got to watch that too. But I'm curious what you think of AI in the education space, because that's fascinating, right? So where does your mind go when I say that?
So yeah, I think the college that I started was the first college to integrate AI as a student. I didn't put up firewalls. You know, I'm very much against the idea. I think educators spend so much time trying to push away innovation.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
It's because of the personality type of it, because they're more like the personality type is typically the same. Because like the way I look at it, people are either drawn towards new and thrive on newness, or they're more with the status quo, which is fine. We need both. But the personality type of a teacher is generally to do things as they've been done. Would you agree with that? Right.
I do. I mean, obviously it's teacher dependent, and there's just like incredible
teachers
out there really pushing the envelope. But in general, schools very much fear this technology because it threatens kind of what they are. Parents are fearful of this technology, understandably so, but there's no going back. So we can't just fight. We have to talk. So how I used it at my university, it was the student in the class. We would ask a question in a Socrates like, you know, learning environment. We would have discussion, and then we would invite, and you know, some of them nicknamed or, you know, whatever our chat. And we would ask that dialogue to be a thought partner, because AI is an augmentative tool. And these students in college now will be using it in whatever career they're in. I truly believe that. Yeah. And it's only getting smarter and better and faster. So you have to understand how to use this and leverage it to be a 21st century adult.
No kidding.
So we have to teach it.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Teach how to use it, which is so cool, because it kind of a part of it is teaching how to think. A lot of the problem that I had with my educational experience was a lot of focus on memorization as opposed to critical thought, right? And I love AI for this, because there is a real necessary thinking that has to take place in order for you to get the answers that you want, specifically the questions that you ask it, or better yet, which is something I love to do, asking it what questions to ask you and spark your own thinking with the questions that are more optimized to get the result. So
I mean, we have so such cool. great examples of that. You know, Khan Academy, they're using AI in such clever ways. And so is Synergy from Elon Musk's educational venture. And we're seeing them pop up more and more and more. And we're going to be able to tailorize instruction.
Yes.
I know I just like made it like, oh, everything's so terrible. But I actually think as an educator, we are living in the gilded age of the democratization of education. I mean, it is truly remarkable. You too can be taught by Spielberg by taking a master class.
Yeah.
You know, access the best education in the world from your laptop in Ethiopia. All you need is that connection, right? And we can do that. And that is the most exciting piece about what's happening in education. And AI is just another piece in that puzzle. And we're going to be able to tailor instruction and get students where they are. Like, there's a very cool K-12 school, I think it's called the Future of Education, where the students start their day. So I very much believe in hybrid ed, but why I believe in computers and technology is because I believe you leverage it to free up the teachers and the students to focus on what really matters. And that is mastery, in-person experience, interpersonal relationships. Yeah. All those things matter. Computers don't do that well. Let's leverage what they do well, which is teach math, actually. Khan Academy has proven they teach math better than the average classroom teacher.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're seeing
Already too, and it's only been out for ChatGPT has only been out for a year and 3 months at this point. So yeah, so imagine what's going to be like in 5 years. Like that brings up such an interesting point because the customization aspect that you talked about is fascinating to me because the way I see it, let's use a movie example for, or even like a webinar, a sales webinar presentation or something like this. We'll use a movie example. The way I see the future of watching movies is the AI will scan your, it'll psychoanalyze your online activity. Maybe ideally even input journals so that it understands your psyche and possibly more than you do with all of its understanding of the human race, and then be able to structure a movie in real time for your preferences or for an educational experience in real time for your learning style. For it'll analyze the way you think and be able to deliver instead of the classic give everybody the same and then hope for the and then see the, some of the students rise and then some not. In the future, the way I see it is AI will analyze the way that somebody learns and be able to structure a course based around that learning type in real time based on their feedback as well. It's a, we don't know what's going to come of that because there's going to be
And
way
what I see,
smarter
so there's
humans like.
only one school that I see doing cool things with that that I know of. I know there's others, but one that's really far along. And I said the future fab, but I didn't tell you what they're doing. So every student in the morning spends 2 hours on a custom AI course list,
Wow.
customized their learning style, where
Huh.
they are. Even if they're a seventh grader, they could be doing 12th grade math.
Yeah,
Nothing special,
right.
right? And then the rest of the day, now this is a very unique school with an entrepreneurial twist, they build businesses.
Whoa. Well, I haven't heard of that. Where is that out of?
Ed school. I want to say it's in the South. I want to say Atlanta. But the my former school that I was with is playing with this concept as well. Lots of people, my college that I started is a hybrid. Take your credentials from Harvard, Yale, Princeton, live with us in communities in Costa Rica, Portugal, and Miami. Live with 150 people, and that is a very thoughtful number. One of the things what we're seeing college campuses is a very divisive.
Yes, it's
I
more and
know
more
you're
so.
really,
Yeah.
really want so. And what we know, just anthropologically speaking, so I'm very big into research-based answers. 150 is really the number. It's called Dunbar's number. It's Dunbar's ratio, where you can create a connection with everyone and feel part of the group and not have to splinter. So
Yeah.
our campus is only at 150 students, okay? And they
Wow.
live abroad. Abroad, I think, is the best gift you can give to anyone to learn, go challenge, see the world. And they're getting real world working opportunities and internships. So because we leveraged online using the best of the best, and if that teacher's at Duke University, you take that. And if that other class is better at the University of Hong Kong, take that from online.
Love that. It's so cool.
And create a custom framework
Yeah.
met you and your interests while living with, and because there is something important, and I don't want everything to go online because we've seen that. I
Right.
am also very aware of the, I might be pro tech, but I'm also very aware of the mental health crisis.
Right. Yes. And the seclusion that the technology can bring on, right? So I love the campus idea because it's so important to have that experience, even just to grow your personality so that you've got a persona that's likable and able to be leveraged in an online atmosphere as well. Because I feel like it's difficult to grow a persona online, but you can to take it offline, but you can take it start offline and use the same persona and the personality that you developed in the online space too, right? So it's both at the same time, which is important. I want to get into right, and I want to get into a little bit of the college that you started, specifically from the lens of, let's say, an entrepreneur who's watching and has a course business, or they're passionate and they're amazing at one specific thing, and they're teaching it, maybe selling it through a webinar, maybe $1,000 or $2,000 course. I want to draw some parallels between you starting a legitimate college and an entrepreneur that's passionate and highly educated and experienced in something and wanting to transfer that knowledge elsewhere. Where did your mind go with the parallels there?
So I think it's really, I see the future of online courses. I think it's a tough one. I'm really interested. I think we're going to see a huge drop in prices of online education, which, by the way, I'm all for.
Yeah.
I'm definitely the student advocate here. So I think we're going to see a lot of that. I think Coursera, when I think about platforms to look at, you got God, I'm like blanking. We have Coursera, and then the other one that you can kind of It just got bought by Udemy. They messed up.
Udemy,
got acquired by someone. I don't remember who owns it now. But there's a lot of exciting ways to reach students now through these mass platforms. And I think we're in the age of the creator economy. And what excites me about this is everyone is a teacher.
True, naturally so.
You know, like we all have something to give, and now you can give to the world. And I think it's going to be really interesting, especially for the United States, depending on this election, of what makes something education. You know, Steven Spielberg's web masterclass, should that be worth college credits? Should you be able to transfer that learning? What makes something credible?
Yeah, right.
Huge topic here, you know. So we're going to have those discussions, especially when it comes to vocational skills. We have a huge issue. I don't know so much about Canada, but in the United States, we have a huge issue with people not going into the trades.
Right. Yeah. Same with Canada. Yeah.
Huge issue. So how do we make that more accessible? How can credits be transferred in more exciting ways? These are big ideas that we have to address. So I'm very excited to anyone who's creating courses. I think go for it. This is the time. Now, can you create a hybrid experience? I personally believe you're going to get better learning results. So the one thing we have about online courses, and we know this for a fact, the completion rates are abysmal.
It's like 6% if you're lucky. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Most people don't even log in the membership area. It could be blank and nobody would know.
So it's really important to edutainment. Okay. Make it as edutainment as possible. Okay. That's one of the ways you can increase. And then of course, the best way is to have a hybrid experience. So having some in-person touch points gives people more grit, more teeth in it. So I do say to content creators, if you can, you know, create a hybrid environment, that will be more successful.
What do you think about gamification? I feel like it's proven, even just with with games on your phone, for example. Candy Crush is an example that comes to mind. You solve a puzzle and you get like sparks up on the screen, you got sounds going on, your dopamine levels spike, and it's exciting. And so, you know, tailoring that, and also the leveling up experience of a game like World of Warcraft or an online game like that, there are leveling up, which kind of draws you to continue because it leverages our human need for progression. And so I'm wondering about the ways that we can go about tailoring that into to really get people taking the courses and thriving with the courses, as opposed to just buying them and feeling good about, you know, buying them, I progressed, I did something, but then never actually doing anything with it, which is, you know, it's a point.
And I'm guilty of that.
So, yeah, we all are. That's the thing, right? Yeah, I got audiobooks galore that I haven't delved into. I thought I would, but things come up.
Gamification is 100% a must. And unfortunately, just we are in a war of attention. We've never been at war like this as educators before. Now, you can't learn. The number one thing for any student to absorb content is to give you their attention. Without that, nothing matters. You could be dancing, singing, and have the best course ever. And we are at a war of attention before already hard for some students to tune in back in the 60s, you know, like you'd all those things are, but now we are competing against TikTok. I mean, we are competing against algorithms that know how to hit the dopamine, know how to excite these students, and the amount of time we have with them. So let's say a teacher gets to see a student 45 minutes a day, a math teacher. Well, that student's spending 6 hours a day on TikTok. Like, we don't matter. We can't beat that equation. So we do need to bring the experts in entertainment. And, you know, there are some really exciting things. You know, one of my favorite universities that I think is really smart and ahead is ASU. No, you know, doesn't get the, it's an Arizona State University, but they're working with Steven Spielberg. No, like they're having real conversations.
Doesn't get better than that. No kidding, right? And then you can see the future of that, an AI analyzing that course, that educational experience, and being able to multiply it to everybody, whether, like you said, if they're in Nigeria or in Japan, it doesn't matter, because they're still able to access that top level education from the world best in the field and be able to have that education the same way the people at ASU do. It's so cool. What about the experience that you've had actually starting your college? What about the mistakes that you made, something that we can learn from without having to, in the online course space, right? Without having to make the same mistakes.
Well, the online, so I have so many mistakes and like
right.
every,
Well,
I mean, I don't know where to begin, you know? You know, I heard most of my mistakes, when I think of what were the mistakes, I think of my own personal ones. That's what comes to me first. You know, as someone, I spent most of my career in the high end, very expensive private school sectors.
Yeah.
And I left to focus on mass education and make an impact. When I started my career, I really did feel like, okay, if I can create a research-based school with all the money in the world and open resources, which my first endeavor was, oh, I'm going to make so much impact. Triple down education does not work like that. You can open all your school resources, but that doesn't mean it'll ever get picked up, taken, or really utilized. So I left to focus on mass education to create this college that was affordable and by being a hybrid model that focused on experiential learning by leveraging technology. And I learned very quickly that I didn't know enough about that student.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the podcast. And I want to let you know that I've got a free book that you can get if you want to tap into more of these resources. And you can get that for free at kylesbook.com. Back to the podcast.
Has to take out multiple loans, is the only first generation college student. That was like really quite a learning curve. So, you know, even though we're competing against colleges that are, you know, $70,000, $60,000, and ours is $22,000, we didn't count under current laws to get federal funding. So most of these students take out loans. All loans. And we could get into the why that is the most dangerous thing. And taking out loans for just $20,000 would be way better. We were walking out with this. Most of our students actually, we had two, and we were the first college to value degree seekers as equivalent to trade seekers. They both deserve the collegiate experience. Right. And that's why we're not getting anyone in the trades. So about 60% of our student bodies actually fell on the trade side.
Really?
So they were with us for 4 years. Huh. They were, you know, they're maybe one, depending on what they were going for and what was required. So I really had a battle because we could not get government Title IV funding for our students. And without that, it is very hard to make a difference in the mass market.
No kidding. So it's impossible, really, especially for that student, right? So how did you get around that? What did you do? What did you do to fix that problem?
Well, we're winding down, you know.
It's hard, man.
It's sad, and that's why I said I have to wait for who wins the next election.
Yeah,
we just weren't going to make it there with all the lobbyists we'd have to do and how much funding we'd have to do. Another thing, you know, that I do want to say to people going to the in-person space, because I really got to straddle the both of the two, is the mental health crisis and the amount of insurance you need to protect your institution and the students on your campus. You have to raise an exorbitant amount of money to do it right.
Yeah.
And colleges have like entire legal staffs of 30 to 40 people just alone focusing on the issues of my roommate's invading my personal space and I don't feel uncomfortable, to accusations of rape. And like, these are happening on college campuses, not just once in a while. College campuses probably get within a given day, like 40 different incidents reports.
A single college campus?
Ranging from this person's invading my personal space, or he said something triggering, you name it. It's reported. So it can get quite contested, and you spend a lot of time on legal.
What do you think about that? What do you think about the whole woke being triggered easily and then having to file these complaints? And then what's your opinion on that whole thing? And we're on dicey water. So if we want to change topics,
I think we should be having these conversations. And as someone who's created four DEI departments in my career, I am one of the few that have come out to say, We have seen the results of the, by the way, so well-intentioned, I was part of it and very vocal, move to creating these apartments that really looked out for students that were minorities within our populations. Like, beautiful intention, 100%. The results of, I would say, 25 years plus of this strategy now have been creating more divisiveness. Affinity groups I have found, which are like the answer, like just to give you an idea, there are 450 identity-based affinity groups. This isn't right. even just like hobby-based affinity groups at Harvard alone. That's wow. a lot of identities. And it becomes echo chambers. And what I've noticed in my own colleges and even my K-12 experiences, they come out angry. Yeah, like, you know, kind of us versus them. They're all together. They just kind of complain. And there's no outside voice to be like, oh, but maybe they were feeling this. And maybe that came from a good intention. There's no assumption of positivity.
And then the algorithms just perpetuate that infinitely because they thrive on that. We're more likely to share something that is emotionally impactful, and the negative tends to be more emotionally impactful. And so the algorithms shove the negativity at us, same as news. I mean, it's nothing new. What do you think the solution to that is? Is it difficult, extremely difficult
problem? I will send you my article on this. And at the end of it, I said, I've never written anything where I don't have a, I'm a positive person. I'm very optimistic about life, where I would never opine on things if I didn't have a solution or at least a stance to take on it. And at the end of the article, I said, you know, I haven't been vocal because I don't know what to do about it. I don't know how you end it. And it's very difficult to get these people out of power. And I will give you just my personal story. I was working at the DEI person, and I learned that she did not believe that the Holocaust
was
real.
Whoa.
Yeah. And that is a very concerning thing because, you know, when we talk about minority of minority minorities, we're really getting to like the Jewish population. And that was very concerning. But it took me 2.5 years to move her out of that position just because she was of color and a woman and the head of diversity and inclusion. It is very hard to get rid and even to fix things in departments because of their positioning within the school. Makes sense.
So it's like you're the captain of a big ship. And you're a supervisor too. So you're a captain of a big ship with a tiny little tiller that's trying to, you know, you're trying to steer this thing, but you can only make so much of a difference even as the supervisor. Wow, what a conflict of interest that is to not believe in the Holocaust as the diversity head. I mean, geez. And you couldn't get her out of there for 2.5 years, even with that the case. I mean, like,
well, we had to put her on medical leave. Like, there is, because it's so touchy.
Right. Yeah. No kidding. I can't think of a solution either. I wonder how AI would come up with one, because it's like that's where my mind goes. If I can't come up with a solution, let's shovel it off to AI and see what comes up, because it's got a lot more thinking power than I do. That's for damn sure. It's fascinating. Wow. What do you think about the whole somebody getting into a position because of their race or their gender, as opposed to basing it off of who's able to do the job the best? I mean, that's frustrating as all hell, right? People can get into a position and society suffers as a result of that, because it cascades down, and what could be a great organization is mired up in bureaucracy, and then it gets every branch gets tainted with a lack of hiring based on ability, as opposed to things that people can't control or don't affect the end result. What do you have to say on that? Is it a horror situation right now?
Yeah, it's like Harvard would be a really good example of that as well. You know, never has there been a hire to the most prestigious university with a CV like that. I mean, they're they're her predecessors are remarkable. You know, I'm all for putting a woman in that position. Obviously, I'd love to see it, but I'd love to see it be the right person. And that's the most important thing. And, you know, the whole plagiarism thing, you know, Harvard, I know personally, and I've seen it done to students, kicks out students with very quickly for plagiarism. They hold that, you know, it's Harvard and this, and to have the old, you know, she plagiarized even her acknowledgments. I don't even know how that's possible, but you know, 100, you know, there was over 65 incidences of plagiarism and they never even looked into that. Or if they did, they overlooked it because they wanted this hire so badly to be of the, more of diversity than the past. And that backfired. So we know the results of this policy.
No kidding. And we see, actually, in a way we do, in a way we don't, because it's so difficult to see where it actually leads to, not having the people that, that are competent as opposed to the people who have the right gender or race to match a certain quota, which is, you know, it's a difficult problem. But let's move into something with a solution to it that's readily available, because we can get down that path all day, but I'm like you, I want to focus on the positive side of it exactly the same as you do. So I'm wondering how we can go about shifting this conversation so that it's more so of a result oriented specifically. I think that there's a lot more that you can offer in terms of helping an entrepreneur who's looking to, because that's what our audience is typically, is an entrepreneur looking to grow their business. And a common pattern that we find is somebody that is trying to sell knowledge, for example, and you said that you're a proponent of that, which I love. What are some things that you would tell them, or if you were going back to your to yourself before you were starting the college or as you were starting it, what would you tell yourself from the lens of helping an entrepreneur with their online business right now?
So in regard to education, this is going to sound, you need, this is my advice, I'm sorry. It's going to seem so superficial, but this
what
is it.
Got?
Really understand TikTok.
Interesting.
Okay, your students are on there. That is where they get all of their information. That's why I talk about we're in the war of attention, right? Yeah. They get their news, they actually learn about things on TikTok, and some of it's amazing. Like, if you're into physics, like I am, like, some of the greatest minds are giving away just ideas on TikTok. So, but TikTok's going to be so important. If you are launching a business targeting students today to buy a product, TikTok. And you have to understand their algorithms. You know, we, so the only reason Nix was successful is we became the biggest university on TikTok, which is embarrassing. Because we're this small startup and there's huge universities, but they ignored it for so long. Now, in the last 6 months, that has changed. But we were the only university talking directly to students. Students only speak to authenticity. They don't want the brochure. Their parents might. Honestly, these parents are kind of on TikTok too, research says.
True, yeah.
So they really want the meme, the 10-second video that feels fast and furious, you know. I think one of our best things was, do you want to be a social media manager? And then showing them the path in 5 seconds. You can live in Costa Rica, you can get this hands-on job, and you can get the Facebook certification and be out in 8 months. Boom,
bang,
boom,
bang, bang.
Boom, boom. Speak to them and then put the students in front. Students in front, let your students speak for your product. That is so important to Gen Z.
You caught onto a trend that was, I mean, at the beginning of something that before any other college was able to. How did you know that TikTok or even a short content platform in general was something that you would want to leverage? How did you know that that was a good idea to lean into?
It was debatable, actually.
Right.
We had a huge fight over it. And I want you to know, at the first, I was against it because does it sully our brand? I mean, education, you know.
Yes,
like,
yes. Huh?
You know, I need to have a pipe and have lots of books behind me. You know, like that is what parents think. You know, they want rigor, prestige, and are they going to go with something that their kids find on TikTok? But what we're learning in the market I was in, and that's changing, you know, it really depends for the entrepreneur on the market, was these kids were making these decisions. They were. You know, they were going to either take out all their life and loans or try something that felt a little more sustainable. So they were making the situation. It was a risky move. Do I think if people looked at the mix, would they say this is a place of rigor and, you know, culture? No, I think I went for a different route, but it allowed me to scale my business way faster and reach hundreds of thousands of people. I think our number one post that brought in the most students, and this just shows you where we are. It's a culture. Started with a monkey.
Interesting.
On our campus in Costa Rica.
Huh.
I mean, everywhere. So every morning.
That's cool. You started with the goal. You started with the vision of what the future could look like and then moved it back to the process.
Yes. So monkeys. Monkeys. Whatever you're doing, entrepreneurs, try to get a monkey.
Was it a cute monkey? You leverage the cuteness? It was adorable, right? What comes to mind is like a Tinder profile with a puppy. You know, it's like supposedly, statistically speaking, that's the number one move that people can make is, you know, so you tapped into something similar to that, the cuteness factor, and then got into the actual specifics of what you can do to achieve this point in life that everybody wants to be at. But you tapped into it at the very beginning. It's impressive. It's very cool. Because it's hard, like you said, it's a debate at the beginning. And at first you were against it. It's hard as hell to find something and be able to put yourself out there to bet on this being the thing. That's why I'm so curious how you were able to know that this was going to be the future of advertising for education. Because it's not that the pipe and the tie and the very, very prestigious and proper and concrete, you know, it's not like that at all, because that doesn't work.
And I can't name them, but six universities approached us to do their marketing on TikTok.
No kidding. Did you?
We did not. Listen, I offered it to some of our marketing team. I don't know what they've decided, but that's not my passion. I'm all about trying to think of new frameworks that allow students to get a job, feel whole, feel like they're ready to adult, know who they are, and not end up in debt. That's it.
I like that. I mean, that's cool as hell. So let's say that there's somebody that's 18 years old, fresh out of school, or it doesn't matter the age, they're in a point where they're confused in terms of what to do with the future. Where do you start with an individual like that? And you light up when I say that, which is so cool.
I'm like a real, so before I started Mind the Gap, before I started The Mix, I started a think tank called Mind the Gap that looked at the research of success. What is the actual success and what are the metrics of success? And fascinating stuff in this space. So if you want your child, the best advice I have to a parent of an 18-year-old is gap year, gap year, gap year, gap year. Mm. Okay. Our current system is old. What we know is even countries that have a service year or they have to go to the army, these students walk into college better and ready prepared. Because life has been so far school, after school, school, after school, homework, repeat. They're on a treadmill, right? Institution like this. And then they go into another treadmill. Giving them a break and actually seeing what life is, whether that is they're doing service for a year or working at McDonald's to save money. It really is about getting into life and learning about yourself. And what we've seen from gap year participants and tracking their journey, they're more likely to graduate. They're more likely to use their degree of study. Now, 78% of us do not use our degree of study.
78%? Whoa. Yeah. That's terrible. Oh, terrible. My God.
Do you blame them? They're 18.
Right. Well, that's the thing. You don't know anything. I know exactly. And so what about tactically speaking, how can people go about finding that? What questions can they ask themselves? What can they do to start to self-identify with what they're interested in so that they can move towards that lane in life? Without just
take a gap year. And that's the best intervention we know of right now. There's no rush. As I just told you, these kids, the whole idea that they're going to school and then they're out for life, that is obsolete. We know that. Either they're going to go to school within their organization, like Microsoft has their own professional development, whatever it may be, or they have to go back to school to career shift because their job is no longer exists.
No kidding. That's another huge problem too. I know. What do you say to the person who's in university right now to be something that AI is most certainly going to take over? For example, and not to say that it's not going to, coders, for example, not to say there aren't going to be coders, but it's completely different. Whereas the people in university learning coding right now are still learning how to do it without AI, which is a crime because it's they're learning something that's completely pointless, is a waste of time and money, as opposed to, but the education system can't move fast enough to be able. So
no, it's so slow and it's so painful. And we've been doing the same policies over and over again. You know, for example, you know, I happened to have voted for Joe Biden, but you know, he's dumping a lot of money into the community college system in the United States, which is our poorest performing product. Let's rethink the product. You know, it goes to the most disenfranchised and most at-risk population. True. So we're giving them the poorest product. But I do feel like we're heading, for the first time, the universities are forced Their hands are being tied
For the first
and they're being
time.
forced. Yeah. We'll see what the next couple of years are.
What do you see it happening? I mean, like, how fast do you see these changes taking place? Because now they've got to move quick, because like they've never had to move quick before. This is something completely different that changes everything. And I feel bad for the students that are dealing with it right now. How fast do you think it's going to change? And what specifically is going to change first, do you think?
So, I mean, this is not me, but this is more like economists in the United States. And I don't know about Canada, but I can only speak to the United States. We predict about 50% of colleges to go bankrupt in the next 5 years.
Wow.
Okay. Just for a factor of reasons. One being demand is down. People are really, and it's very interesting of who's leaving. We're seeing a huge, and which is quite scary, departure of males in the system. Really very concerning. So we're going to see a big closure consolidation, and I think we're going to start seeing some newer models. So another example would be like ASU Local, a hybrid model. You get their education, but you don't have to go to Arizona State. You can work, you can be a single mom working and going to school at the same time. Other universities are looking at models like that, but online is going to have a huge piece in this. Students like it better. It's really interesting. If you look at the COVID data of engagement, students were more likely to ask questions. Yeah,
Interesting.
I know. Yeah, because I guess this is a different generation and we're dealing with the mental health ramifications of this, but they're really quite not as comfortable in person as they are online. Interesting with I mean, one of the best things that ever happened was the discovery of this that we use now in the United States with suicide hotlines. They're all text now. They
Really?
won't call to say I'm suicidal, but they will text. It has been a huge benefit to that work. Same with online. They're not willing to raise their hand, but they are willing to put in a chat group. Could you say that again?
You know,
Interesting.
it goes back to the psychological principle of safety with familiar. You're spending most of your time, even just sleeping, in your place of residence as opposed to at the school. So therefore, it's more familiar. You're probably more comfortable there. Same with texting as opposed to calling. A lot of the newer generations don't call as much as text. And so it's a more familiar environment to them. So they're more familiar with it, more likely to act upon it. The question becomes, how do we prevent the mental health problems that arise from the seclusion?
Hybrid, hybrid, hybrid. They need to be on a campus. Kids need to learn, they need to throw up in the bush and get their heart broken and all those things that is about finding yourself that cannot be done in isolation. We need to focus on community and take technology, embrace it, see it what it's best at, leverage that to focus on what it can't do. And that is bring students together and make networks. Because the number one, as someone who studied, what is the predictor of success is networks. So if and I always tell students, when they go to college, I go, I know the classroom's important, but let me tell you, the quad is equally as important. So spend 50% of your time just talking to that person, because guess what? They could be your first investor. You never know.
Interesting. I mean, look what Mark Zuckerberg at Harvard, for example, and there are all kinds of cases like this. No kidding. You never know who you're going to meet. It's troublesome though if somebody's going to ASU and they live in Florida, they don't have that hybrid experience. And it's so easy to seclude yourself. We found that out with COVID. So we don't know how to do that yet. Maybe virtual reality will be able to bridge that gap. Who knows?
Right.
If we can trick our psyche into thinking that we're in an environment with, I mean, like. We
But
don't
if
know who
colleges
this leads
lever
to.
their online resources, faculty, and that's another issue. After COVID, none of the faculty wanted to come back. They loved it.
No
Got
kidding.
that too. Okay. So if they could leverage that to then focus all their expenditures and time on in-campus experiential learning, going to the colleges, and this might mean making it smaller, making quads of groups, so that you can take a group to Dell and meet with the CEO and do internships with local companies. There's no time or place in that in the current system, but you can if you give yourself the time and space, and they can do that, and they can lower tuition by doing this.
No kidding. And then even make money by doing the internships because they're providing a service as they learn, which for a lot of people is the best way to go about learning for some people's personality types. I mean, it's exciting the time that we're in. I can't wait to see where it's going to go. Before we kick this off, let me ask you, what's a question that I should be asking, but I'm not asking, that if I were to ask, it would produce the best answer for an entrepreneur that's looking to start a course or sell their knowledge? What question should I be asking?
I guess the question would be, an entrepreneur should know when it's okay to, and this was hard for me, and this is why, and a great book, and I'm just blanking, it's called When to Quit or something. It's Annie, is it Annie Duke? The professional poker player wrote a book about quitting. I think it's called Quitting, maybe. And one thing I think entrepreneurs do is like we don't want to ever give up. But sometimes it's, and then you get yourself deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. But sometimes the first idea is a launch pad to the actual idea. And that's where I find myself.
Yes, me
And
too.
it's not failure, it's not quitting. It's actually hedging your bets. And it's a great book for every entrepreneur to read because you read all these books about like, you never quit, you keep going. We get this message, and quitting is such like a negative connotation to it in general, like failure. Keep going, press through. If there's a wall, scale it, go under it, right? That's every entrepreneur book you read. I think there needs to be also an entrepreneur book that talks about when you need to say, this isn't working before it's too late, and be able to take that to the next. Yeah. So I highly suggest that book. It really helped me.
Interesting. There's a saying, sometimes the only way to get out of a hole is to stop digging it. And it's so easy to continue to dig. It's like I won't give up. I struggle with this because I feel like a lot of our types and entrepreneurial types in general have a difficulty giving up. We're very persistent, no matter what happens, over it, under it, through it. I'm gonna get through it. I'll get through this lock, even if it means that I have to drip sweat on it for 100 years to finally erode the metal. I will do it. And sometimes it gets to the point where the only way to get out of the hole is to stop digging. And how do you, that
And give
follows up
yourself the
with
passion for that. And
in
like,
compassion.
really hard as an entrepreneur to do that. I mean, I at one point I was like, I'm gonna sell my kidney, whatever it takes to keep going, you know, like, you know, and when those months where you're like, oh my God, am I gonna make payroll? All those things. Sometimes you gotta sit back and go, like, okay, I gotta take myself out of the trench. What is in the best interest of everyone here? And is this idea really as good as we think it is, or did we get something wrong?
And oftentimes it's too complex. That was a struggle of mine. I would spend months coming up with these highly complex, brilliant in my mind strategies with flywheels that all came together so perfectly, but it was too complex to actually implement in the world. To start this flywheel spinning was too difficult because of all the steps that were involved. And now I'm finding the simpler it is, the easier it is to implement, and the more likely it's going to succeed as a result of that. Abby, it's been a pleasure. We had a fascinating conversation today. Anything else you want to add before we go here?
No, I love entrepreneurs that are going into education. We need as many as possible. It is absolutely the time of reckoning. There's going to be a lot of changes happening in the next 5 years, and I think if we can get some more entrepreneurs to help push this forward, we're going to go somewhere really cool.
Amazing. Abby Brody, thank you so much for being here. It's been a
Thank
pleasure.
you.
All right. I hope you enjoyed that podcast episode. And if you want to get a free copy of my book, go to kylesbook.com and you can get a copy there. I'll talk with you soon.